بسم الله والحمد لله والصلاة والسلام على رسول الله وعلى آله وصحبه ومن والاه وبعد. In this session, then we're going to look at the debate that we promised in the previous session that we're going to turn our attention to, just to see how the method of argumentation of Muhammad Hijab, it is a weak, fragile method. It leads to him being overpowered on occasions, to him becoming confused on other occasions, and what is of concern to us, that he causes the non-Muslims and the Muslims who are present to become confused. And this is a problem, no doubt, Ikhwan, when we have individuals being influenced by Muhammad Hijab. And if you were to look at his debate, then you, of course, will see people saying, I learned so much from you. But what is it you're learning from Muhammad Hijab? What is it that is being taught? What is it that you're being nurtured upon, other than the principles of the falasifa? Principles of philosophy. In this debate, this is a debate between Muhammad Hijab and an individual known as Aaron Ra. Aaron Ra, a guy who has a following on, I believe, social media in and among the atheist community. And during the debate, we have the presence of a number of other individuals. There is a Christian theologian and philosopher. There is a physicist, a female physicist. There is another individual who apparently is clear about some of the arguments, theological arguments, and so he poses his own questions. And so there are a number of people who are present during this debate. So after arguing with Aaron Ra back and forward about necessary existence, wajib, wujud, and compulsory, or mumkin al-wujud, and so on, the same argument that he uses in all of his debates, he comes to a conclusion with Aaron, and then he asks him the following question.
Aaron, did you get the point now?
I think so. Yeah, you believe in a big banger.
No, not really. I'm saying that.
This is Aaron, do you get the point now? He said, yeah, I think so. You believe in a big banger. And so, of course, he's being sarcastic, but he obviously knows that Muhammad Hijab is trying to establish the belief in God. And so he said, yeah, I think I get the point. You believe in a big banger. So he's saying, no, I believe in a necessary existence that everything else depends upon. Again, no mention of Allah, no connection between this necessary existence and the belief in Allah. Yani, purely as long as you accept that there is a necessary existence, he feels that he's won the argument. And so Aaron, he says, well, yeah, you know, it appears that you believe in a big bang, and then he continues. He said, can you refute that? Can you refute that? So saying you assume, Yani, that there is a God, Yani.
Making a point from first principles. Have you got any refutation for it?
So he's saying, look, I'm making a point from first principles, which are these principles that he's using. Do you have any refutation for this?
I don't need a refutation for it. You ended the whole thing.
So and so this shrewd atheist, he says, I don't need a refutation for it. And then he goes on to explain why. You ended the whole thing with an assumption that was not warranted by your principles. And so, it is not as Muhammad Hijab believes, as long as you fill your discourse with a bunch of terms that most people can't understand, other than someone who is skilled in the field of philosophy, and they will feel that they've been overpowered. No, people can see through the argument. So he said that you have not proven that which you're trying to use this argument to prove.
Have you got any refutation for it?
I don't need a refutation for it. You ended the whole thing with an assumption that was not warranted by
your principles.
So you've ended the whole thing with an assumption not warranted by your principles.
That you assume there's a God.
That you think that there's a God. Which is clear then that after a period of speaking about the wajib wujud and mumkin wujud and so on, that it didn't bring and it didn't lead to the conclusion that he believes it leads to. It is not conclusive. And there is a divide between believing in Allah Azza wa Jal, and these principles that they use. And as we've mentioned, atheists can use those principles in their favor. The Christian can use those principles in their favor. So you believe the power source for everything is God. He's clearly getting upset. How much longer is this going to take? So he's saying, look, my articulation has to be respected. So in any case, we have quite clearly that this argument has not been effective. And here, Aaron Ra is not the most intellectual of the atheists that are present within the park. But he's not affected, and he's not. He doesn't hold that the argument is sufficient. And so the Christian theologian, he interjects, and he mentions.
So a necessary fact is something which could not be any other way. Okay. In the context of existence, what I'm saying is that you have possible existences, and you must have a necessary existence. Because if you have only possible existences, which could be any other way, then it's conceivable that this world would have been any other way.
So here he's saying that, you know, we only have, the world is only one particular way. If there were other existences, then we would see the world possibly being any other way. And so he mentioned,
this universe could have been any other way.
Just within this galaxy, and there are every other way is probably out there.
So he's saying that we're just looking at this one galaxy, and there are billions of galaxies, so every other way is possibly still there, is possibly out there.
Perfect. So you're agreeing.
So he's saying, so this individual, Aaron Ra, hasn't agreed with him whatsoever. Rather, he's saying, you're saying that the universe is one way, but we believe that there are multiple universes. This is not something that is established, but he argues on its basis anyway. We believe that there are multiple universes, and it is possible then that this thing could have been any other way. These other ways are probably out there.
Probably out there.
Oh, perfect. So you're agreeing that this universe could have been any other way.
So listen to him forcing the position that perfect. Either he didn't understand what the man just said, or he's trying to overcome or overpower the debate by claiming that he agrees, but he doesn't. So he doesn't agree, and he made it clear. He said, no, I don't agree. I'm saying that there are possibly other variations.
Could have been any other way.
No, I'm saying that there's all kinds of variations.
Yeah, right. So you agree with that, right?
Yeah.
All right.
So he says, yeah, right. So you agree with that. So he continues to push the point, you agree. But the point that he's making and the point that the atheist is agreeing to, they're not the same points. So this is where the Christian theologian, he interjects. He says, Muhammad, even if your arguments work, and listen to his statement.
Right, so you agree with that, right?
Yeah.
So he's not interested in Josh, who is the Christian theologian, interjecting. Look, we can just leave it. We can, if the affair was about establishing haq, then anyone who brings an interjection, you should respond to it. And let the haq be manifestly clear. And so this individual, he interjects.
Yeah, right. So you agree with that, right?
Yeah.
All right.
But even if you are just
we can talk about Christianity later.
Even if you argue works, there's a gap between a necessary being and God.
Haq. He said, even if your argument works, there is a gap between a necessary being and God. There is a gap between establishing a necessary being and or saying that that necessary being is Allah, which is why, as we mentioned, the call to Allah is a call to Allah. It is not a call to a necessary being. It is a call, a clear call to Allah.
So even
no, not for me.
No, I'm saying even if you establish.
For you, bro.
Even if you establish
a
necessary.
No, that's the thing.
No, I'm not saying Christianity.
So he said, no, not for me, for you, bro, because you're a Christian. He said, no. Even if we're, I'm not even talking about Christianity. I'm just talking about belief in God, theism.
Can we do one thing at a time?
I'm talking to an atheist.
No, but I'm saying just because I just want a clarification.
Yeah, yeah.
You can establish the necessary existence of this being, okay?
Right.
But that doesn't mean that there has to be that being.
But we haven't done that yet.
So he's saying, look, even if you establish the existence of this necessary being, that doesn't mean that that being is God, is Allah. But the method of the argumentation of Muhammad Hijab is that he is satisfied with anyone holding that or accepting that there is a necessary being. He's satisfied with that, and we're going to see an example of that to come.
With him. So can we do that?
The properties of God.
No. But we can have that.
So he said the properties of God do not come from this necessary existence. And so he is saying the attributes of Allah are not taken from just believing that there is a necessary existence and that is it.
Separate discussion, Josh. You can have that.
Good arguments for God's existence, and I don't think the ontological arguments.
He said there are good arguments for God's existence, and I don't think the ontological argument is one of them. So even this Christian theologian, he argues and says that, look, your argument is flawed. Your argument is flawed. There are better arguments for the existence of Allah.
That's fine, bro. That's fine.
And so during this argument, there is a physicist, a woman who is present within the crowd, and she becomes, and you can see that she's getting frustrated with the argument, and so she interjects. Naturally, she's interjecting that which is based upon physics, but she has some arguments that she presents and that she poses to Muhammad Hijab. So what does an atom, her interjection is, well, what does an atom depend on for existence?
That existence.
And so he says necessary existence. The necessary existence is what the atom depends upon.
You haven't
shown yet that necessary things aren't also possible things, so those two categories.
Now what I'm saying is,
so that was her first interjection, and she wasn't happy that he'd proven the connection. Then she goes on to mention that, look, if you're going to make an argument, you have to prove your argument.
You're the one trying to prove something to me. The burden of proof is on
you.
You're the one trying to prove something to me. The burden of proof is upon you.
You've just made a claim, actually. You said that.
Necessarily for your argument, you need to prove a thing.
No, you said.
So, and you'll see it becomes progressively aggressive with the woman. And then he claims that she makes claims that she didn't make. And so her issue is you have to prove the point that you're trying to make. And so far, you haven't proven it. So far, you haven't proven it. And then he goes on with this imaginary overpowering ability that he believes he has. He goes on to claim that the atheist movement is crumbling before me. As we mentioned, every atheist knee must bow to Muhammad Hijab. Listen to his statement.
You said that particles don't depend on anything. Can you prove that?
No, I've said that for your argument to hold, you need to show that fundamental particles don't depend on anything.
Okay? Alright, so here's the thing.
So her argument is there are fundamental particles that, as far as physicists are concerned, that they depend on themselves, that they don't need anything external. Naturally, she's a kafira who doesn't understand or doesn't know any better. But she's saying, well, based upon your argument, then the atoms that exist and that we've looked into and we've researched around, then they don't need that. They don't have. They exist by themselves. So what is your argument in relation to that?
What you and Aaron?
And then listen to how, all of a sudden from nowhere, he believes he's defeated these atheists. And look then at how deceived this man is. And amazed with himself. SubhanAllah, the new atheist movement is crumbling right before me.
By one, every single one of them cannot deal with this argument. And it's not because of, by the way, it's I can't believe it. Like, it really, all it took was just a little bit of bringing out.
But Why Muhammad is getting excited for, only Allah knows. Because there's no overpowering. There's nothing that has taken place during any of these debates that would make anyone want to get excited. But he believes he's achieved something.
What you and Aaron couldn't deal with is, and this is the new atheist movement, subhanAllah, the new atheist movement is crumbling right in front of me. One by one, every single one of them cannot deal with this argument.
And actually, the onlookers and the one who watches the video, who's got no clue about the argument itself, it just appears that, you know, whatever he's saying, he must have overpowered them because look how he's going on. So it appears to them that he's done something because many of them don't understand the arguments anyway.
Because of, by the way, it's, I can't believe it. Like, you know, it really, all it took was just a little bit of bringing out an argument, and the whole new atheist movement in front of my very eyes.
So can you, she said, well, stop, can you just make your argument? And so what we see then is that they are, when these arguments are used, they're not satisfying arguments. And then we hear another ajeeb statement that comes from him. And this section is coming towards the end of the argument or the debate with Julia, this physicist. So she says that for your argument to hold, you must prove that fundamental particles depend on something else, because as far as they're concerned, they don't. So he then says, well, they depend on the law of nature.
Wait, no.
So she said, what do you mean they depend on the law of nature? Explain.
Physics.
He said, the laws of physics. And she says, which are? She said, well, I'm studying physics, and as someone who studies physics, I want you to tell me what the laws of physics are, because physicists don't know.
Okay, well, let me ask you a question. So as someone who studies physics,
yeah.
You're still an undergrad, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so you're in your first year?
Yes, I am.
All right, so someone like Martin Rees has wrote a book on just six numbers.
I don't know
who
that is.
Okay, so we should know, because...
So then he begins to waffle on about Martin Rees and just six numbers. An individual has written a book around the presence of maths within the physical world and within the realm of physics.
This is a person who's actually outlined the six fundamental constants, or among them, for example, N. N equals nature. He actually calls it N for nature. And he says that is, and that's what he was talking about, the numbers that detail the laws of nature. For example, he mentions six different numbers, E, N.
Those are numbers of mathematics rather than physics.
Yeah, physics.
So in any case, she mentions all of this is just all mathematically meaningless. This number system or this number scheme, mathematically meaningless. So we move on to after this section where he waffles on about the number system. So how does this relate, she goes on and returns him back to the point. How does this relate to fundamental particles? So he said, but you said that particles don't depend on anything. She actually didn't say that. What she said was, how do you know that they don't? So he's saying, you said that they do. When she was actually saying, how do you know that they don't? Prove that they don't depend on anything. Or prove that they depend on this necessary existence. So she was saying, just prove it.
Do you believe that particles are independent?
Of what?
You said
So now he claims that she's retracting her argument. Of course, the cameras are looking, and so we have to make the affair look good. Don't retract your argument now. Don't retract it. She wasn't actually making an argument. She was saying, you prove that these fundamental particles are dependent upon this wajib wujud that you're speaking of.
This is what Christian missionaries need to learn.
So then he turns to Josh. He says, watch this, Josh. Watch how I deal with her, basically. And this is, a show and a display that indicates quite clearly that this man does not have the wisdom of da'wah and the wisdom of the da'i. And this is not how we give da'wah and how we call to Allah Azza wa Jal, humiliating individuals who may genuinely have a genuine question that they wish for you to prove. Ud'u ila sabili rabbika bil hikmati wal maw'idati al hasana wajadilhum billati hiya ahsan. Call to the way of your Lord bil hikmah, with wisdom and with good sermon, and argue with them in a way that is better. That is what Allah Azza wa Jalla has commanded us. All she said, I'm saying you have to show it. That is it.
Particles are independent.
Of course.
You said just don't retract your argument. Because watch this, Josh. This is what Christian missionaries need to learn. Now, you're saying that particles are independent. Yes or no?
I'm saying they're fundamental kind of particles.
No, because you were trying to interrupt me.
I'm saying that, to the best of my knowledge, there are a certain amount of fundamental, the standard model, which is the best model we have for the universe right now. It is incomplete. All physicists admit that it's incomplete.
No problem. But Julia, you said that the particles, fundamental particles, don't depend on anything.
Definitionally, they're not composed of anything else.
No. You said, unless you want to retract that statement, which is what every atheist does when they're in front of me, now you said that fundamental...
So again, the man is deluded. She didn't say that fundamental particles are independent. She said that is where the knowledge of physicists are. You prove that the point you're trying to make, that this necessary, or everything returns back to this necessary existence, prove that that is the case with fundamental particles, because as far as physicists are concerned, then they have, or they don't depend on anything other than themselves. So she's saying, just, you're making the claim, you proved it, prove that point, because this is something that we've learned. She said, well, I believe that this is the case, that, i.e., that is what we've been taught. I'm not saying that it's 100% the truth, but you prove that your argument is true.
Now, do you believe that fundamental particles don't depend on anything?
I believe that to be the case, excellent. But I'm not...
So he repeats the question, she repeats her answer. I believe that that's the case. And I'm not saying that is the 100% truth, but that is what we were taught. You prove your point. Now, how pathetic really is this response of Muhammad Hijab? There is no issue, there's no point being made. She didn't accept any of what he's claiming. But listen to the statement.
Which is what every atheist does when they're in front of me. Now, you said that fundamental particles don't depend on anything.
I believe that to be the case. Right. I do not claim that it's
true. Perfect. Now, do you believe that fundamental particles don't depend on anything?
I believe that to be the case, excellent. But I'm not claiming that
Julia,
that's true.
Thank you for saying that, because now what you've shown is that you believe in the existence of an independent being. But the only thing is, hold on. The only thing is now...
No.
I mean, the whole thing is cringeworthy. He's saying, so you're saying that you believe that a fundamental particle, or those particles, that they are independent. Yes. And so he says, I'm glad you've said that, because now you believe in an independent being. So the only issue then, as far as he's concerned, is bringing them to the point of believing that there is one necessary existence that everything returns back to. How is this da'wah to Allah Azza wa Jal? So she's saying, yeah, I believe that that is this in the cell. And he said, khalas, then you believe in a necessary existence.
Your statement, because that's what every atheist does in front of me.
You said...
You're putting words in my
no,
mouth.
No, no, it's on camera. You said you believe... You just said it two minutes ago. You just said you believe that fundamental particles are not dependent on anything. By definition, what you're effectively saying is you believe fundamental particles are independent. Now, what I'm saying
technically,
is...
Technically, what I'm saying when I say fundamental
don't
particle
say what you mean.
Is...
That's what you mean.
No, I'm just explaining what the standard model says.
Right, okay, go ahead.
Fundamentally,
yeah.
According to quantum field theory, fundamental particles are essentially just energy spikes in
no
a
problem.
Field.
By your belief. And
so, so she returns back to what she was arguing, and that her argument was that this is what we believe. You prove that it is not so, and that it is on the basis of this necessary being that you're calling us to.
So it depends on energy.
Julia, you shouldn't have come here today and tried to challenge me. Because what you've done, no, seriously.
And it wasn't a challenge. She just said, can you prove that the atom and the fundamental particles, that they are dependent? Because our knowledge says otherwise. So now it becomes, you shouldn't have come here and tried to challenge me, and so on.
You should really think about it before you come and stand and make claims
without
revising it.
I told you what you need to
Julia,
show me.
Julia,
to
I don't need to show
own.
You anything.
Again, she goes back to her point. Oh, the only thing I said to you was you just need to show me to prove your point, to make your argument.
Yes, you do.
You shouldn't have come here because what you've done now is you've given me exactly what I wanted. In the beginning you said that I have to prove that there's a necessary independent being. Now you've just said you believe that fundamental particles are not dependent on your words exactly. You believe, you said, I believe fundamental particles are not dependent on anything. Now, all I'm saying as a Muslim is that my understanding of...
So, God is a muon.
So now, listen, he's about to utter a statement of tajseem and a statement of kufr.
Let me finish.
So she said, so God is a muon. The muon is this particle that she's debating about.
Let me finish.
La ilaha illallah. He says, yeah, your God is a muon. But the only difference between your God and my God is size. And then he speaks about, it cannot be such and such, and cannot be such and such, using these statements of the philosopher. But listen to this statement. Your God is a muon, your God is this particle. But the only difference between your God and my God is size. The only difference between your God and my God is size. This, no doubt, is tajseem, is making Allah Azza wa Jalla a jism, a body, just as it has in it kufr. Whether Muhammad Hijab realizes or not, and this is the issue. The issue is these affairs should not be entered into by the one who doesn't have a clue concerning the aqeedah, the actual aqeedah, and the actual belief, and the actual aqeedah of Ahl Sunnah wal Jama'ah. If he's not well grounded, leave this alone, because you're only going to cause confusion. You're only going to cause people to be more distant from the deen of Allah Azza wa Jalla. Debated a guy who was supposed to be one of their specialists, and he was speaking some rubbish. That is how they're going to leave. They're not going to leave feeling that this is haqq, and that this is what I should be upon and be about. Rather, this guy was just talking rubbish. He just tried to humiliate me, and then he just dismissed me.
That's the only difference. Honestly, you need to understand, you're not an atheist anymore in front of me. I've converted you straight to Islam.
Allahu Akbar. You're not an atheist anymore, he says. I've now converted you straight to Islam by her believing that this particle is an independent being. I've converted you straight to Islam. This is the deen of Allah. This is shahada. This is how we call people to Allah Azza wa Jalla. This is how the prophets and the messengers used to call. Billahi alaykum.
The only thing you need to do, no. All you need to know and believe in is the right attributes of God and the Prophet Muhammad is the messenger.
So now the only thing you need to do is just believe in the right attributes of God and the Prophet Sallam is the messenger. So she goes on to ridicule, and so then is Muhammad the prophet of the muon and the electron, and because of the fact that you've attested to the fact that the muon is, in your argument, a smaller version of Allah. Inna lillahi wa inna ilayhi raji'un. Then look at how after this pathetic argument, look how he just dismisses this physicist.
And that's what atheists do. Josh,
Yeah, so, Julie, is there anything else you want to say? We're done. We're done here. Is there anything else you want to say? And then we have an individual who comes in and interjects. And this individual, he interjects, and his argument is one that Muhammad Hijab will find difficult, as we're going to go on to see.
You talk about contingency. I understand it's pity that people didn't give you a chance to give your full argument.
Yeah, is the Quran contingent?
No, absolutely not.
So we've got... So he said, is the Quran, his question is the Quran contingent? Yani, is it dependent upon anything? Is the Quran contingent? And so he said, no, absolutely not.
The Quran is not contingent.
No, because we believe it's an attribute of God.
So he said, no, it isn't. It's not contingent because we believe it's an attribute of God.
Well, that's the issue, isn't it? So
it's not an issue.
Well,
you asked the question, you thought I would say yes.
He said, so you asked me a question, you thought I'd say yes, but it didn't work. He said, no, I knew you would say no. So here, the individual goes on to argue. So he mentions here the Quran is a subgroup. And here we're going to see how Muhammad Hijab understands the Aqidah. Here he said the Quran is a subgroup of an attribute of God known as speech.
No, it was there at the same time. It was always there. It's a term. It was there at the same time. It was
so,
a subgroup of an attribute of God, which is speech. So it's
which came first?
So he asks, and here is where the issue begins. Which came first? Yani, which the two came first? So then Muhammad Hijab, he falls into this innovated bid'i statement. He said, no, it was there at the same time. It was always there. It is eternal. This statement is one of the bid'ah of the Kullabiyya that we discussed earlier. The Kullabiyya and the Asha'ira, they began from the issues that they believed in is that as it relates to the speech of Allah Azza wa Jal, they began to say, because of course the issue of speech and Allah speaking and what they saw the ramifications of that would be and are, they began to say that Allah Azza wa Jal, the Quran is not the speech of Allah, the Quran that we have. But the speech of Allah is an entity, is one entity that remains with Allah, that is with Allah Azza wa Jal, and that is eternal. And so they began to say that the Quran is eternal, since it is from that main body of speech that we consider the actual characteristic of Allah's speech. As far as the Quran that we have, they say it is an ibara, or it is an expression of the speech of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, but it is not the actual speech of Allah. This was the statement and the belief of the Asha'ira, of the Ash'aris, and likewise the belief of the Kullabiyya, and this is what we hear from Muhammad Hijab.
It's a subgroup, the Quran is a subgroup of an attribute of God, which is speech. So it's
which came first?
No, it was there at the same time. It was always there. It's eternal. The Quran is eternal. No,
this is what you're saying, but afraid it's not.
Thank you very much. Nice try. Anyone else?
No. So he's saying, this is what you're saying, but and then he said, oh, thank you very much. Nice try. Anybody else? As though this is some gladiator auditorium, and who's going to try me next? And so here, the argument that the man makes, he continues to develop it. And we see the confusion of Muhammad Hijab now.
So the Quran is outlining all the things that the recitation does outline, creates determinism, doesn't it, really? Which is the argument.
We believe in determinism.
You do believe,
yes. We believe God is a determiner.
That everything is determined. No free.
So he said that it creates determinism, doesn't it? That is, that there's no free will. Since the Quran, it speaks of affairs and... He's posing here, presenting an issue as it relates to the Quran. So he mentions that we believe that things are determined, not understanding exactly the point that the man was trying to make. Then he continues.
No, we believe in compatibilism.
If you're creating a Quran that's saying all of these things happened, talks about the Bible, talks about the past, talks about the future.
What's your name, sorry?
John, yeah.
So here we see that the argument is difficult for him to deal with. And So in order, or as a diversion tactic, what was your name again? So he said, look, the Quran speaks about the Bible. It speaks about the future. So it speaks about past things. It speaks about future things.
I like it. Then it's all determined, isn't it?
So that would indicate that it's determined, then it's already pre-decreed. So yeah, you're right. So he's saying, here you haven't proven that the Quran can be is not interdependent, and we'll mention the statement again.
That's clear. I understand what you're saying. No, because it's not created.
The Quran can be non-interdependent, eternal, and not dependent on anything else, and yet the Quran is determined. It is dependent.
So you're saying it's eternal, yet it is dependent, and it speaks of things. Of the past, it speaks of things to come. And so it's dependent upon the things that the Quran describes happening.
Clear. I understand what you're saying. No, because there's a misunderstanding of the Islamic theology here.
So here, now we've here, he enters into talakhbut.
Let me make it very clear.
It was a big thing, wasn't it?
Yes.
So he said this was a big thing, wasn't it? So he's clearly acquainted with the issue from a standpoint of theology. It was an issue at the time of Imam Ahmad, and they believed the Quran was created and so on, wherein hundreds of individuals were punished, possibly into the thousands, were punished and killed.
Ahmad and Mu'tazilis and Ahmad. I'm a Hanbali, right? So I follow Ahmad.
No,
right?
I think
so he says, I'm a Hanbali, yaqul.
People were killed over this,
weren't
they?
Well, not really. I mean, it's not as big as...
He said, well, not really. People were killed over this, weren't they? He said, well, not really. There were hundreds of people who were killed over this. He says, oh, well, not really. A few people were punished. That was about it.
Not a lot, but some people were tortured over it. Yeah, we said tortured. Yeah, we were on the side of those guys. We were on the side of those guys that were tortured. So, in Islamic theology, the Quran is not created.
I know, well, in your belief of that, yeah.
Yeah, no, it's according to the Sunni understanding, yes, right? So, according to the Sunni understanding, it's not created. Obviously, the Mu'tazilis were a group of people that came extinct that believe it was created, but we don't believe in that. So, because it's not created, and they have their own theology, by the way, you have to go speak to them.
Contingent, yeah.
Yeah. So, because it's not created, it's like I'm speaking to you now, right? So I'm speaking to you now. My speech is part of my attribute. It's part of me, actually, right? Because my speech is part of me. So, a speech is an attribute of me, but it's an attribute which is intrinsic to me. So in other words...
So here so far, he doesn't establish anything other than that which even the Ash'ari believes in, that the speech is an attribute of Allah. Speech is an attribute of Allah. And it is a attribute that is intrinsic to me and so on. And that is exactly the belief of the Ash'ari. There is no issue here that he's established, and there is no way that he's demonstrated that he is upon the belief of Ahl Sunnah as in relation to the Quran and in relation to the speech of Allah Azza wa Jalla, that we believe that the speech is qadim and nawa, that is, speech of Allah is eternal with Allah. The attribute of speech is eternal with Allah Azza wa Jalla. But the ahad, that is, each individual instance of Allah Azza wa Jalla speaking, occurs, as we mentioned earlier, in accordance with the will of Allah. That is, he speaks as and when he wills. When he spoke with the Torah, then he did so as and when he willed. When he spoke with the Surah of Ibrahim, he did so as and when he willed. When he spoke with the Quran, he did so as and when he willed. So the general attribute of the speech of Allah is eternal, but each of these individual instances of Allah Azza wa Jalla speaking, then they return back to the will of Allah Azza wa Jalla. Simple explanation.
Speech of Allah is intrinsic to Allah, and the Quran is a subset of that speech, meaning it's also eternal just like Allah.
So he mentioned the Quran is a subset of that speech, therefore it is also eternal like Allah. Again, there is clear indication here of the fact that he doesn't know the belief of Ahl Sunnah concerning the Quran and concerning the Kalam of Allah Azza wa Jal, and concerning how we understand these things. because he reiterates his point more than once. He said it's inseparable and it's eternal, which is the belief, bid'i, innovated, bid'a belief of the Kullabiyya. And so this individual, he goes on to mention one of the innovations of the Sufiya and those who were affected again by this same philosophical argumentation, that is that Allah is everything and everything is Allah. And since Allah is limitless, as they say, then everything in essence is Allah. And everything that we see is an expression of Allah Azza wa Jal, which is one of the beliefs, a belief system known as Wahdatul Wujud, that everything is Allah and Allah is everything. So he brings that as an argument against Muhammad.
His attribute of creation. Of creation.
No,
because what we say is that it could have otherwise not been the case. So the universe can be.
So based upon the argument that all of his attributes are eternal, that he uses in relation to the Quran, this man, he brings this argument to say, well then, that is then therefore the case with the creation, isn't it? Shouldn't it be? Had he had been upon the principles of Ahlus Sunnah, the affair would have been easy. But here now, based upon your argument, this man now brings, well, what about the creation then? Isn't that an expression of Allah Azza wa Jal? So he uses this argument, he's using the argument against him.
Form cannot be taken out of existence in physical form like books and stuff. Yeah, and we believe that will happen.
So again, we hear this establishment of the two forms of Quran, the eternal Quran and the Quran that is recited and that we have. This is the belief of the Asha'ira.
Yes, yeah, we believe there will come a time where all the Qurans will be
saying that even as a recitation,
yes.
It's quite difficult to have a start in the beginning of something that's eternal.
Yeah,
he said, but even if you're saying then the recitation, he said it's difficult for you to have a start and a beginning of something that is eternal.
We believe there will come a time where all the Qurans will be
saying that
So if you're saying that the recitation is eternal, well then the recitation has a start and a beginning. So how do you understand? How are we dealing with this? How are we looking at this? And so again, here the principle of Ahlus Sunnah should have been established, that we believe that the speech of Allah is eternal, but as far as each individual instance of Allah speaking, then it is in accordance with the will of Allah. Allah Azza wa Jal utters them in accordance with His will.
Yeah, no, we don't have a start.
So he mentions here, we don't have a start. That is a start of that which is relating to the Quran. It's clearly reiterating time and time again that the Quran is eternal in his belief. So then listen to another error that he falls into.
Of Allah is one category, and then a subset of that is the Quran. That Quran is eternal. It was only transmitted to the Prophet by the angel Gabriel, which was already there eternally in what we call the Lawh al-Mahfuz.
So he says that it was there eternally in the Lawh al-Mahfuz. So now he's made the Lawh al-Mahfuz eternal. And that is not the belief of Ahl Sunnah wal Jama'ah. The Lawh al-Mahfuz is not eternal. The Lawh al-Mahfuz is a creation from the creation of Allah Azza wa Jal. And so he said it was there eternally in the Lawh al-Mahfuz. Batil.
The preserved tablet, there's an entrenchment of all of those things, codifications, and then that was transmitted to the Prophet.
Philosophically, I don't think you made a
just taking the line of what you're saying.
Where's the fallacy?
But then there is an eternally existing thing with Allah, which is not Allah.
And so the Christian theologian picks up on that. He said, well, then, based upon what you've just said there, there is an eternally existing thing with Allah that isn't Allah. And so he picks up on the this falsehood.
We say that's part of Allah.
Yes, but it's not Allah.
No, it is. We will say it's part of Allah.
What appears to be the case is that Muhammad believes he's speaking about the Quran.
We'll say it's part of part of Allah's attributes.
But one second,
not part of Allah. Part of Allah's
identical
attributes.
To God.
Well, it's like saying, is his mercy him?
Yeah, so, I'm asking, is that identical?
Right, so we will say that it's an attribute of a. It's one of his many attributes.
Yes,
but his mercy, then, his merciful acts are different from
it's like
his mercy,
saying,
right?
It's like,
so then the other guy, he makes a statement saying, well, isn't his merciful acts are different from his mercy, right? This statement is more in accordance with the belief of Ahl-Sunnah than what Muhammad Hijab is saying. Yeah, I mean, that there is, that we have the mercy of Allah, we believe in the mercy of Allah, and then we have the act of Allah Azza wa Jal showing mercy. The act of Allah Azza wa Jal showing mercy is again connected to his will. And of course, he makes a mention here of the Mu'tazili belief that everything, all of the attributes of Allah Azza wa Jal are considered the same as the essence of Allah. Then they make no difference between the essence and the that of Allah Azza wa Jal and the attributes, that they're just one entity. All of them are just one entity, which is not our belief.
No, classical theism is healthy.
And that is, yani, of course, we make a difference between the attributes of Allah Azza wa Jal. There is a difference between the attributes of Allah. Yani, his hands are other than his face. These are the things that Allah Azza wa Jal has mentioned concerning himself. Do we know how they are? Of course we do not. But we do not say that it's all just one entity.
Well, that's a mereological story. It's actually a fallacy, in fact.
It's not a fallacy.
It is a fallacy.
And listen to the falsehood that he's about to mention. And listen to the statement that he's about to make that actually destroys every single one of his arguments and his debates.
Traditional position in theistic form.
Well, it's a fallacious one as well.
No, it's not, because it tries to uphold.
Well, let's not go into that. He's an atheist. He wants to talk about
but it shouldn't just be because he's an atheist.
See, as soon as someone who really knows something about theology begins to speak, we find him shutting him down. Well, let's just deal with his atheist over here. So he's saying, well, that doesn't matter. We're speaking about issues that we believe are true. We believe are truths. And so it shouldn't matter that there's an atheist here listening or what have you. Let's discuss these issues. And that is the case with as it relates to the da'wah. Yani, because of the fact that there's a particular individual here, we're not going to speak about an issue that could guide all of the people, including that Christian that he's speaking to.
We're discussing about something which you are holding as true.
Right, so
I'm coming back to you.
So do you believe God has parts? He said no. He said I don't believe God has parts. So he picks up on it. He says, so then you have a problem then, because you're contradicting yourself.
Let me explain, right? We believe God is immaterial and incorporeal.
Yes.
Because you've just spoken about the attribute of speech. So then he returns back to the same philosophical rhetoric. Or we believe he's incorporeal. We believe that he's immaterial, and so on.
Not composed, but then you have a problem, because if he lacks parts,
go ahead, Jeremy.
Because I'm saying his speech has to be a part. Because then if it's not,
it doesn't have to be. Why you say that?
Yes, because the only reason he doesn't have parts is because everything within him is identical to him.
I don't understand. What's your position? Is your position that God has parts or not?
No, he doesn't have parts.
So why are you saying that you...
So I'm saying anything within God is identical to him.
Here's another thing. That's the Quran, if it's not...
What do you mean by it?
Sorry?
What do you mean by
it? So I'm saying God's attributes, if it's omnipotence, his mercy, or whatever you say, has to be identical to God. So that is a...
What do you mean by that? Sorry. That articulation, I'm confused by.
One second. The only reason why people have held to that is because they have to say that then God is.
Maybe we agree. Because let me explain why we might agree.
Can I just say this one?
Yeah.
Because if they are not identical to God, then things within God is dependent on them.
Josh.
God is dependent on his omnipotence. He's dependent on his omniscience.
Just before you answer that.
Let's come back on that. Right.
So also, is the Quran able to exist eternally without Allah?
No.
No, exactly.
Because the Quran is an expression of Allah.
Well, then it's contingent on Allah.
No, it's like...
Again, the Quran is an expression of Allah. The Quran is an expression of Allah.
For example, I think that's a fair argument.
No.
Then you have to...
Okay. I know what the issue is here. I do know what the issue is here. The issue is here, when you're talking about things, anything, right? What are the only things you can make reference to? You can either make reference to mathematical truths, or you can make reference to cosmological ones. Like, for example, in today's discussion, we're making reference to cosmological truths. When I say cosmological, let me be clear. We're talking about things which pertain to the universe, to the cosmos. So, for example, you're wearing a shirt. That's a cosmological... If I were to make an example, analogy with that shirt, that would be a cosmological example, right? Now, what I'm saying is that all of your cosmological understandings, especially as it relates to mereology, and I'm being very clear here, mereology being the study of parts and wholes.
Now, listen to this point that he makes here. Mereology, in particular, as it relates to mereology, which is the study of parts and wholes. Listen to his statement.
Okay, mereology being the study of parts and wholes is... No, I'm not for you. I know you. You're a philosopher, but for other people. No. Not for the people. No. You know what I'm saying. Mereology being the study of wholes and parts. Any cosmological example we're going to bring is going to be irrelevant to the metaphysical deity, which is God.
That's not true.
Any example that you're going to bring when we're dealing with parts and wholes is going to be irrelevant to the deity that we're speaking about, which is God.
Which is, you can have metaphysical parts. So you have things like matter and thought, which is
my God. So necessarily,
yes, but I'm saying, you just said, you can have metaphysical parts, you can have physical parts. Okay? Yeah. Metaphysical parts would be things like matter, form,
Well, we're saying all of the things are irrelevant to God.
No, they're not irrelevant.
So he's saying all of those things are irrelevant to God, but listen to the statement. Listen to this hypocrisy. The whole of his argument has revolved around parts. That we negate parts from Allah Azza wa Jal. So the whole of his argument revolves around wholes and parts. But here now, when the heat is getting hot, now, a mereological argument has got nothing to do or irrelevant when it comes to our discussion of God. Ajib.
Is that when we're looking, when we're analysing parts and wholes in the world that we live in, that study gets us nowhere in understanding the metaphysical reality of God.
Yes, it does.
It gets us nowhere in understanding the metaphysical reality of God. So why then use it, Ya Muhammad? Why use it in all of these debates if you yourself accept that it gets us nowhere?
Because what you're doing, you negate those...
The essence.
Yes.
The essence of God.
Yes. Philosophers have always tried to negate these things.
Josh, me and you both believe, our respective theologies, that we can never be acquainted with the true essence. We can never know exactly what the true essence of God is. So if we both agree with that, that the true essence of God, and put essence underneath, underlines, if we don't know what, how God is, how he is, in essence, then what I'm saying is that anything you can imagine or anything that you've observed is not relevant to the discussion of God's essence.
Yes, it is.
Gradually say that the Quran is that essence.
John, I can comment about it?
Pardon?
Can I say something about your argument from earlier? Dependent.
So then there is an American onlooker who's been sitting or who's been standing quietly listening to the whole debate. And during his observation, he makes this statement. So they come to a conclusion here that there is absolutely nothing, that this necessary being that you're arguing about, that this is Allah. Nothing. And then now listen to this statement.
Thank you very much.
Jesus, perfect. Which is personal.
Yes,
he
no, no.
interacts with people.
You're absolutely right.
So he's saying that it's conscious, it's personal and so on. So what does he say? You're absolutely right.
Okay. You can only make descriptive features of it, so like you know, with respect to time. Like,
and this is another African onlooker who similarly interjects with these statements.
It's timeless.
Yes.
It's space.
Yes. Yes.
Nothing.
He's saying that the only thing that you can do is make general statements concerning it. It's timeless, it's spaceless, and so on.
Prescriptive about it.
Thank you very much.
You can't derive an ought from an is.
So you cannot derive an ought from an is. Yeah, you can't come to the conclusion that you've come to.
Yeah.
I right. know, you're saying it's Allah.
No, 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 you're right.
Yeah, I'm right.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, yeah,
and if that's what you're...
Didn't say that.
No, no, you're right. And you're right. That, no.
So he shakes the two of their hands and saying, you know what, you're both right. So after all of this argument, after the hours of standing and debating, he accepts that this actually does not point towards and lead towards Allah. Then, ya Tura, why, oh why, would you use a method of debating that you yourself accept does not lead to Allah Azza wa Jal and call this da'wah to Allah Azza wa Jal? And then establish organizations raising money for this da'wah to Allah Azza wa Jal, which doesn't actually lead except to a wajib wujud, except to a necessary existence that is not in any way, shape or form necessarily a conclusion that people are going to come to, that this is Allah. Could be that one could argue for anything.
Not that it's Allah with all of the attributes mentioned in the Quran. Absolutely. Do you know what? I want to shake your hand for saying that. Shake my hand. And shake my hand as well, because this is an interrogation.
You're a TV show, man. I think you.
That was the point that you were making.
Shake my hand.
So we come to the conclusion that actually you're all like absolutely right, and it actually doesn't. And then he goes on to mention that this is one of the issues that I have with Muslim philosophers, who he himself is one of them. And so, Ikhwan, that is just one of the debates of Muhammad Hijab. And you'll find when you go through the debates and listen to them that the man is not well grounded in the Aqidah. The man is not grounded in the Aqidah Salafiyah at all. His claim to be athari, as I say and I mention, is not substantiated by his method of debating and speaking about Allah, speaking about the Aqidah, Asma'i wa Sifat, and so on. There is nothing in his argumentation, nothing in his debates that indicate that the man is a Salafi. There is nothing in his debates. And if we're not Salafi in Tawheed, Salafi in relation to Asma'i wa Sifat, Salafi in relation to our belief in Allah, then what are we Salafi in? So he's not Salafi here. When it comes to dealing with Ahlul Bid'ah and the stance in relation to Ahlul Bid'ah, not Salafi there, Ikhwani. When we look at other affairs that we're going to look at in the next session. In the next session, we're going to look at another one of the tremendous, tremendous errors of Muhammad Hijab, and that is what is related to the Sahaba Ridwanullahi alayhim. And we're going to see, is his position in accordance with the position of the Salaf of this Ummah? And so if it isn't, then we have that which is related to Sahaba, Allah Azza wa Jal, that which is related to bid'ah and innovation, that which is related to philosophical methods in da'wah, all of these affairs, ayyuhal ikhwa, how possibly are we going to say that this man is upon the methodology of the Salaf of this Ummah? We'll look at that in the next session. Bi-idhnillah. Nasallahu subhanahu wa ta'ala yawfiqna wa iyyakum lima yuhibbuhu wa yirdaah. Wa sallallahu wa sallam wa barak ala nabiyyina Muhammad.